work-life balance. It can be elusive and too often tilted unhealthily in the direction of work. It might be obsessive. We live in a wired digital world where the office or work is as portable as a smartphone or tablet. It's tempting to check our email when we should be more focused on living in the moment. It might be out of necessity. A hard-driving boss may interpret our plea for a lighter workload as a sign that we lack commitment and priorities. For a single working parent, it might be the best option to provide for the kids. Later this hour, we're going to hear from some Kansas Cityans and see how they struggle with or overcome the work-life balance. And we'll open the phone lines to hear from you, too. I'm Bill Anderson. This is Central Standard. Family psychologist at KU Med Center, Dr. Bruce Lease, joins us for his monthly visit. Nice to see you.
Great to see you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's keep it real simple for the first question. Just give us the clinical definition of balance as it relates to work and life.
You used some of the important words, the demands that are placed upon us by external, forces, work and home and all kinds of stuff like that. Those demands require that we successfully expend our time and our attention and our energy on the things that matter most in life to us. And so balance is the ability to take care of all that in such a way that we're healthy mentally and physically.
Okay, but there are some realities in this modern world. We're driven to work. In some cases, it's ambition, but in other cases, the workload just has become more demanding.
That is absolutely true. As the workforce has been reduced in the recession, clearly managers and bosses and business owners realize that they can do more with fewer people, but that work doesn't just go away. It becomes part of the workload of the people that are left. So that is accurate. But a lot of it is imposed internally.
Okay, but let me make one more point about the outside pressures, so to speak. There's an expectation that regardless of when it's sent, that I'll respond to an email. It doesn't matter if it's from Dr. Bruce Lease or from my general manager or from a colleague across the nation. There's an expectation that I'll respond to that promptly. That adds additional pressure.
That's interesting that you said email, because messaging is even worse. I mean, if you don't respond to a message, it's interesting because I was always attentive to the people that would and wouldn't answer my phone calls. There are people who'd call me and they wouldn't call back. Mm-hmm. Even if, they may have called me, I call them back and they're not there to answer. And I think that might be more of a characterological phenomenon. I think the people that didn't answer their phone calls, probably the same people that don't answer their text messages and their email quickly. But there is, as you say, that expectation.
I don't want to take us down a rabbit hole, but let me use myself as an example here. I have to prioritize because I get inundated with email. So I have to prioritize which
Absolutely.
Ones to take. And some I simply have to let go. And the same can be true for phone calls.
Absolutely. And it is difficult. And that's why a show like this would even be interesting, because if we could do it all, there wouldn't be any reason to discuss it. I have three different emails, and they're all work-related, but different aspects of my work. So I have what I thought was overwhelming to begin with times three.
I'm not sure that you can answer this question, but would balance have been part of a healthy and whole person back when we were hunters and gatherers?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a requirement that you show up at all the different demands. Now, so many of the demands on us are choices. Nobody has to get on email to survive. But I think it was easier to make those choices back in the hunters and gatherers days, because if you didn't show up, your family didn't eat. If you didn't bring the food back, they didn't eat.
It was survival.
Survival.
Yeah. It was kind of amusing in some respects. I tweeted out asking people if what they do to achieve balance, or if they lack that balance, that work-life balance, what are their frustrations? And the response was pretty low, I have to admit. But this person, Mark Fuller, wrote back in response to that request for information, work-life balance. Sorry, don't have time.
That's cute.
I mean, I think that speaks for a lot of people, however.
It's an irresistible topic to make fun of because, you know, you and I probably should be somewhere other than here right now. And when we're there, we probably should be here. And I mean, it's the challenge of our age, of our time.
Well, and let me put you on the spot, Dr. Bruce Leese. You said you probably should be somewhere else. You have an incredible schedule and a very demanding schedule. So on what level of expertise are you sitting here?
You know, you're welcome to call my wife after the show if you want. You can ask her what I did yesterday. Most of the day was spent on the couch sitting near her doing things I love to do to relax. That's what Sundays are for. A lot of it is work-related, but without the pressure of having to run from one office to the next.
And not having to hit deadline posts.
Right. And I pick up new responsibilities a lot, and I try to drop the ones that you know, are where I'm not as needed. I may have started something out, and it's going well, so I can walk away from it. I was just on one of my favorite jobs was on the Metropolitan Planning Organization, which is a transportation organization in Lawrence, Douglas County. And I, you know, I'd served my time and it was time to move on and teach required courses at the university. So I have to give up things and so do we all.
So give us another example of, you know, something you gave up.
Okay, so in order to become a full professor, I had to spend days and nights doing research. I mean, it was at the computer until my eyes burned. And when I decided it's time to do other things, I backed off of research and reduced it quite a bit and did more clinical care and community service types of things. So,
how do we know what to keep and what to drop from our schedules?
Now you're at the interesting stuff. Now you're at the stuff that really intrigues me. That decision-making process is one that requires a degree of mindfulness that most people don't engage. It involves values clarification. It involves getting feedback from people close to us. It involves an accurate appraisal of the demands of work and other things. It's a courage to give up things that we have become dependent on, like media to some extent. So it involves, as I said, values clarification. It involves really clarifying your values so that you know who you want to be, who your ideal self is, and then shoring up who you are, your real self, with your ideal self. That sounds all complicated and stuff, but you know, if you call yourself a, in your case, family man, it's of value to say to your family, hey, am I around enough? Am I available enough? If you say, I'm really invested in being a program director, in case you are, I'll say, you know, do people feel like you're doing your job? So deciding who you are, what you want to do, who you want to be is the most important part. And that's the part I say requires a certain degree of mindfulness and attentiveness. And then to be really mechanical about it.
Yes.
Scheduling your day so that the things you claim you are, you actually give time to.
So can these values and these choices, and I think I know the answer to this, but I feel the need to ask it, can our values and our priorities kind of flip-flop throughout life?
That's what I was saying earlier about spending less time doing things. I love research, but it was my entire life, and as I did less than I was doing, my world didn't come to an end. So what flip-flopped, I chose other things. I said earlier, patient care, community service, started a little retail business because I had never done that before. And so, you know, it flip-flopped in that way.
Now, you say mindfulness, and when you brought that, introduced that into our conversation, I thought of two things. I thought of meditation. Actually, I thought of three things. I thought of exercise. I thought of spirituality.
Ha, that's very good, because that was something that I was thinking would be part of our conversation. I wrote here on my notes that contemplation contributes to a greater sense of purpose and identity. So that's what spirituality is about, figuring out why we're here and what else there is besides our little self-centered selves.
Hmm. A family psychologist at KU Med Center, Dr. Bruce Leese, is with us on Central Standard, and we're talking about work-life balance. I'm Bill Anderson. Perhaps you've found that balance. How? Do you need balance? Why haven't you been able to find it? 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. We put a post on Facebook, and Russell Hill wrote us, "My problem with the work-life ratio is that my work doesn't care that I have a life. You have kids? Not their problem. You need to see a doctor about chronic depression? Maybe you can reschedule that for another day. With so many people needing work, any type of request for time off is not accepted."
You know, it's interesting because when people have a need at work for more time or a raise or something like that, they sometimes make the mistake of going to their workplace and to their boss, whoever, their manager, and they say, you know, "I need a little bit more money." And their manager or boss says, you know, "Tell me more," if they do plan to listen. And the person says, "You know, my kids are going to start going to private school and this and that." I'm not sure I'm a big fan of telling your workplace that you need more time for a specific reason, unless it's an emergency. I mean, if you have somebody you love is sick or there's something urgent, then I could say, you know, my family needs me. You know, my spouse broke their leg, or, you know, I can't ambulate, can't walk around. But, you know, I think I'm agreeing with the person who responded. I know I'm agreeing that work doesn't, a lot of jobs don't care. And some jobs do care. You know, you really have to size up the atmosphere. Part of that mindfulness and values clarification involves deciding whether or not you want to work for a company that cares about you personally and that can afford to give you leeway or not. I talk all the time to young people I know well who are trying to decide when they graduate from college, do they want to go work for somebody or do they want to try to work independently? There are risks in both. Balance can be harder if you're on your own because, you know, you only get to eat what you kill, as they say. You only get what you put into it. But when you start doing things well in your own entrepreneurial endeavor, your own work that you do, once you start, things get rocking and rolling, you get a lot of freedom. That may never be the case in a business or industry where they have you clocking in or out. But that's all consideration for this life-work balance.
So a person finds herself in that position where it's just completely unbalanced and there's no support in the workplace. Is it time to try to seek other employment? You referenced like working independently, but maybe find a more suitable employer.
Yeah.
Which itself brings on a lot of stress and a lot more engagement of one's time.
I'm a very, very, very big advocate of small business. I own a small business, and small for me is six people. You know, that's pretty small.
Pretty small.
And, you know, when people need time, they get it. And that's a freedom you can give in a small business where people work together and decide, well, who's going to take that time? You know, it's a good way to tell if people are invested in their business and it's in working for you, and that's whether or not they're willing to give up time so that somebody else could have time, and then they come back and really love and appreciate their workplace. It's not that common.
What about the glorification of busyness? You know, I'm incredibly busy, Bruce, and that's sort of a validation, and it's sort of this, you're going down this self-important kind of world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you talk about stages in life, you know, the stages you're supposed to go through. You're supposed to break away from your family when you're a child and become an adult. When you're an adult, you're supposed to start developing close relationships and start a family, blah, blah, blah. But I would say that need to glorify busyness is something that people should grow out of, like, developmentally.
Uh-huh.
I used to think it was great when people said to me, "How do you get all this stuff done?" You know, and now I have no interest in telling people how busy I am. It slips out of my mouth once in a while.
Yeah.
But nobody's really that interested, and it isn't glorifying.
Yeah.
You know, maintaining good relationships, being physically and mentally healthy, those are things worth aiming for, much more than aiming to show everyone how busy you are.
Are there any actual health effects, some health benefits when we work real hard and are driven by ambition and the desire to achieve at a high level and impress our superiors?
I'm glad this is a show about balance, because it's actually that if the show was about work, I'd still come back to the phrase balance. My answer to you would be, you know, the health benefits come from being imbalanced. A worker that comes to work and produces with lots of energy and pep and, you know, and drive, that's the person that does well at work.
That's Dr. Bruce Leese. He's at the KU Medical Center, a family psychologist. We'd love to talk to you, 235-2888. Phone Central Standard at 816-235-2888. So, you know, in researching the show, I was taken by the word leisure. And economists keep it simple. They define it as simply not working. Now, is that the definition, the clinical definition you would use?
Oh, my definition, you know, might be kind of weird. I was thinking about yesterday on the couch and the nap I took yesterday. Bill, please don't tell anyone I took a nap yesterday. They might think I'm lazy or something.
Yeah,
My Sunday
Shame
nap.
On you.
That's what I think of as leisure. Now, if you asked my wife, she'd probably say I relaxed all day, but she would also tell you that I worked all day. You know, I think I was leisurely and, you know, she'd probably say I was leisurely but working all day. So,
yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that, actually. Hey, you know, you had talked about, you know, in the work-life balance equation, you had talked about making time for civic responsibility. This was as we prepared for
Huge.
This show.
It's gigantic, I think.
Well, go there.
Well,
because to me that sounds like it's just another layer of responsibility that takes us away from the leisurely activities that keep us mentally sound and healthy.
Well, I have a pretty huge view of what it takes to have a balanced life. I hear, you know, with the polarizing that's going on these days regarding politics. Mm-hmm. In our nation, with all the people that complain about leaders not doing their jobs, my answer to that is, why don't you volunteer to do something that benefits society, perhaps even at a level that's political, not necessarily running for office, but I would say every single community has some kind of volunteer activity that involves like historic preservation or transportation or something like that. So I believe that civic involvement is a necessary way of staying balanced if you are going to comment or worry or complain about the way government or politics works. You know, I've been on our planning commission for 4 years now, and I don't feel helpless there. I feel like I'm it's not a elected office. It's just a volunteer job once or twice a month, and it gives me a way of feeling like I'm not just saying I don't like the way things happen. I'm saying I'm doing something, and it benefits people.
Mm-hmm. So, two of our intrepid colleagues took to the street, a coffee shop, precisely late last week, to ask people about work-life balance. Let's listen.
I co-own this coffee shop, Key Coffee, in the River Market. It's interesting here because we live in the same neighborhood as the coffee shop, and so there's this kind of like always kind of intermixing of it, which is kind of why we moved down here as well. So we have this interesting like work-life mix, not even really like a balance. It's all like one kind of clamor together thing. It's kind of cool though. We like it.
I run a food blog. It's called Gimme Some Oven, and I write about recipes and life and all sorts of other random stuff. I feel like I'm always trying to work on work-life balance. As a blogger, there's just stuff going 24/7, and so it's hard to kind of like just turn things off. And so, but that said, I've been trying really hard lately to just work on prioritizing the things that mean the most to me, which is usually relationships, and just enjoying the things that mean a lot. I think for me, what's been really successful is trying to, like, even the night before, try to kind of plan the next day and really just kind of have a set schedule in place and set boundaries, and to know that, like, even if something comes up, I have plans in place.
That tape, courtesy of KCUR's Brianna O'Higgins and Allison Rollitz. And Bruce, react.
I love those people. That's wonderful. I mean, that is at least if it's 100% accurate. I mean, that's it. That's the way it's supposed to be. You're supposed to be involved in your community, and you're supposed to enjoy what you do, and you're supposed to give back in some way. And I love what the food blogger, I didn't hear their names, but we'll call them the coffee shop co-owner and the food blogger. I love that the food blogger talked about relationships, doing things that matter, night before being prepared. You know, as I listen to these people talk on tape, I'm hoping that everyone listening to us is thinking, that's what I want.
Okay.
I hope that this show inspires people to say, I want what they have. I want to feel good about my life, because that's what this is all about. That's what balance is about.
Let's go to the phone lines. And Tom, what do you have to say on the subject?
I have to get used to being called Tom because it's not really my name, but that's what I'll go by, because my wife works for a large corporation in Kansas City that's known for its philanthropy. And the regular work week for my wife, she is told, should be at least 55 hours. And if that's not the case, it's probably more like 70 or 80. And this is on a regular basis. It's not once in a while. It's all the time. And it's a high-tech company, and it's very much like a throwback to the 1930s, before unions came about and everything, where the employee has no choice in the matter. And they have loopholes that they use, for instance, whereas a salaried employee used to be a really well-paid employee. If you're middle to low-end waged and on a salary, as long as you're paid the minimum threshold, there's no limit to the number by law how many hours you can work.
Well,
we all thought about the 40-hour work week and everything. It just doesn't come into play when you're on a salaried situation. And it's just that there is no equity. There's no balance.
You know, I so appreciate your...
His frustration, it's palpable.
Man who calls himself Tom, thank you for calling.
Yeah.
I would say that... You mentioned 55 to 70 hours a week. What I have found to be very helpful when working those kinds of hours or even more is to so intricately involve my wife in my life that there isn't anything outside of work, and I'm sure she would attest to this. If I have a dinner meeting, I want her to be there. And you know, if I have to do something on a weekend that involves work, I want her to be there. So I have done that work-life balance thing with many, many, many hours, sometimes more than your wife, by making sure that anything that I do to enhance my work that isn't sitting in the office includes her. And I'm reminded of the book, Be So Good They Can't Ignore You. I believe Cal Newport is the author of that book. Extraordinary book. Kind of encourages workaholism, but not really. My thought is that if you're so good at your job that they have to love you, then when you ask for things like integrating your family life into it, they're not going to fire her. So that would be my hope. I don't, you know, when I work for a big company, even KU is a big company, I don't expect them to cut me a deal to be with my wife. But if I'm so good and doing more than what they expect of me, they're not going to get rid of me for doing that. So I include her in everything.
Bruce, European nations lead the world in guaranteed time off. I think Spain and Germany require something like 34 days of paid leave, and Italy, France, Belgium, England, they're all right behind.
Yeah, they rebel when somebody tries to take that away.
What do you make of that?
It works terrific. Don't forget they have seen their share of financial problems of late, and not Germany, of course, because they support the European Union essentially financially. But, you know, I think that since we're in this system here, people ought to do whatever it takes to make it work for them so that they stay healthy. And I don't know how well it works in Europe. I think the real question is whether it works fiscally for them.
Well, you know, the climate isn't politicians aren't necessarily embracing the concept. In fact, a presidential candidate, Mitt Romney, was quoted as saying, European-style benefits would, quote, poison the very spirit of America. Hmm. While on the other hand, economists, at least some economists, say the negative effects are pretty small. So I don't know. I don't think there's a groundswell of support for, you know, mandating vacation time, but I don't know.
What I've learned from being an entrepreneur when I take off my psychologist hat and I just do the entrepreneur thing is that there are so many ways to get employees engaged in real ways, in ways that are meaningful to them as well as, you know, to me as a business owner. It's not a matter of giving them fewer hours. It's a matter of them feeling like they matter. Mm-hmm. And when they matter, they'll work as much as they can, and they won't have to work more than that because I impose some kind of external rule on them. So I think that's I can't comment on the European countries, but I can say that we could do better here. Lots of companies could do better here at making people feel like they matter.
David's phoning from Kansas City, Missouri, and you have a question about vacation time.
Yes, I do. Thank you very much. I am a professional that often finds myself not having completely used my vacation at the end of the year, but find during the year there's fellow employees that have tragedies in their lives. And I've researched vacation banks, and I'll be glad to take my answer off the air, but I believe that's a great way for employees to help each other. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
David, it is a great way. I know that when somebody has an emergency at KU Med, in the past we have had the opportunity to give away, I think, sick time maybe it was. And it's a really good feeling to do, and I compliment you on your recognizing the value of that to other people. That gives you a sense of balance in your own life by giving back.
That's our guest, Dr. Bruce Lease on Central Standard. Our conversation will continue in a moment. We'll return to your phone calls, and we sent a couple of staffers out to talk to Kansas Cityans about work-life balance. I think you'll find their thoughts quite interesting. This is KCUR. Thanks for joining us on Central Standard this morning. I'm Bill Anderson with Dr. Bruce Lease, a family psychologist at KU Medical Center. Our conversation is centered on work-life balance. How many of us have lost it? How many of us have found it even in some cases? But, you know, there's a whole lot we can do to complete our life, to live a more whole life, and it's all rooted in well-being. In fact, we'd like to hear from you, especially, you know, we've kind of talked about people who are struggling with it. But it'd be nice to talk to a couple people who have found some work-life balance, because perhaps you have a good tip that the rest of us could utilize in our lives. 235-2888 is the phone number to call, 816-235-2888. In fact, let's talk to Stacy, who's calling from Leawood. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, I think the problem is just going to get worse with this whole work-life balance, because I think the way we're raising our children today is to have very busy, busy kids. And in the mom pecking order, if your kid isn't busy, then you're doing your job as a mom. I mean, we have kids that have no free time. It's one activity after another. And I think that's the suburban way now the children are raised. That's all they know.
Stacy, I want you to talk to all my patients, associates, and friends who do that. That is so absolutely true. And I feel like I'm shattering people's worlds when I say your kids don't have to do every sport. In fact, the truth is they don't have to do any sports. They don't have to be in band. They don't have to be in choir. They don't have to be in dance.
Well, downtime is seen as a bad thing.
Absolutely.
If you have a kid who has downtime, then A, you're not doing your job as a parent, and B, is something wrong with your kid?
Stacey.
Because in the suburbs, it is, it's busy. Busy equals successful. Parenting, business, everywhere else. If you're a mom that is not on her phone, then what's wrong with you? Aren't you busy? Aren't you successful? Aren't you volunteering at all these different things? I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how this, plays out over the next 10 or 20 years, raising children this way, and what kind of adults they'll be.
Stacey, do you have young children?
I have the whole gamut, elementary to a graduating senior in high school.
And how have you overcome this whole pressure that we put on our children?
Well, I have kind of stubborn children who were... I have one daughter who
did you say
very passionate.
I'm sorry,
about
did you say seven?
Kids. I have a son who won't. He's like, yeah, not going to do it. I just think, and then I read an article maybe many years ago. Is it Anna Quinlan who was the columnist?
Right.
And she wrote a column about taking her Saturdays back. And we are a family that has no sports on Saturdays. We actually have a weekend. And we are the only family I know. I mean, that's just not my kid's thing. It's tough. And the high school, I think also, you got to be in these clubs to get into college. You have to do this or that. And I'm going to tell everybody out there, your kid does not have to be in a bunch of clubs to get into a really good college. That is a fallacy.
You've said it so well. It's hard to add anything to it.
But at the same time, I would argue within a balanced regimen that band is good, that sports teaches team play and discipline and all those things. I think it's just a question of giving them the downtime and some free time, not to be thinking about those things. I don't know. What do I know?
But if you have to check your kid's schedule a month out to see if you can schedule a play date, then you have a problem as a parent.
Well, yeah, that is
a problem.
Well, I will say confidently that I have observed families that allow their kids to use the time creatively rather than having it scheduled for them. And when they place restrictions on that, like they don't allow their kids to spend the entire evening surfing the web or playing electronic games, when they restrict that somewhat and they allow their kids to make decisions, their kids seem more relaxed. I see kids in my practice who are exhausted. They get up at 4 in the morning to get to things early in the morning, and they go until 6 o'clock at night. These kids are exhausted. So, Stacey, I really appreciate your comments.
Bob is retired, calling from Gladstone. Hi, Bob.
Hey. Great show this morning.
Oh, thanks.
Well, I tell you, all those comments just makes me want to talk about everything but what I'm called about. But anyway, my little comment is that one of the things I had to learn, and I learned it basically by retiring, was working can just kill you. It can kill you, the demands of the job. I was a clergyman for 32 years.
Yeah, that's not just Sundays.
You're just never off. You're always on. And the expectations, written and unwritten, mostly unwritten, the depression rate amongst clergy is just astronomical, and the suicide rate amongst clergy, it's just amazing. So I'm retired, and I'm just so happy to be retired. And I have people who fellow clergy who say, "Well, what do you do? I mean, my goodness, don't you minister to people?" I said, "No, I don't minister to people. I'm retired, man." And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. I can just enjoy life. And then the next point, and then I'll get off this phone, is that word mindfulness. It's a very specific word. And I did a lot of study in the various religions. And in Buddhism, mindfulness has a specific meaning. And I'm wondering if that's where you got the term or what, but it's a kind of a universal thing. You don't have to be a Buddhist to practice mindfulness, but it is
certainly
a wonderful practice.
Yeah.
And then finally, I'm going to say this, the joys of laziness I am lazy, lazy, and I work long and joyfully on my given hobbies. So I'll take it off the air.
That's great.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. So I got all. I've written a bunch of things now with Bob talking. Number one, it is wonderful to hear that somebody who has retired is enjoying retirement, because I'm thinking of two people right now who retired without being mindful of what they were going to do with retirement, and it's not turning out well. So I wonder about the extent to which the fact that Bob was a minister in his career. I wonder if he is more mindful, thoughtful about where his life is going to get meaning. Because when a person retires and they don't know as they retire where life is going to get meaning, that's where they're at risk for depression. Even if they didn't like their job, quitting cold turkey and having nothing else can really result in a lot of suffering. I like the term joy of laziness. And let me just comment on the mindfulness thing. Mindfulness is one's taking the time and effort to focus on what's really going on in the moment. So as I say those words, I instantly feel mindful. What's going on in this moment for me right now? So that is what mindfulness is. All of the religions of the world, all of them have some spiritual component where mindfulness and meditation is important. So it's every religion. And in psychology right now, mindfulness is probably one of the biggest up-and-coming processes, procedures that's used to help people live more healthy, balanced lives. Most of the therapies have started to integrate the concept of mindfulness, teaching people to notice what they feel, to notice what's going on around them, to accept it, or to commit to some change. So I think that's, Bob, thank you so much for all those comments.
Perhaps you have a strategy or two to help you find that balance, that work-life balance. 816-235-2888. It's 235-2888. And calling from Lee's Summit is Mary. And Mary, it sounds like you have a technique that works for you. Are you there, Mary? Apparently Mary had to go.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, there you are.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was going to say this segues into what your last caller said and your last comment with the mindfulness. I also had a stressful job. I'm a retired family practice physician, and I love retirement. But I turned to yoga when I was still very busy working and had three kids and multitasking, and just fell in love with yoga and had continued that as a second career. But I just really want to promote that as a way for people to get to that mindfulness. And yoga, I don't mean just the physical asana classes. You need to find a place that also incorporates a meditative component at the end of class, a shavasana, where you get to spend hopefully at least 10 minutes in quietness, meditation, and getting in touch with your inner self and realizing that being in the moment is what it's about. And also, C.S. Lewis has a quote, which I love saying in class, that says, "You don't have a soul. You are a soul. You have a body." And I think that really kind of incorporates what the gist of yoga is about. So it's, you get your body in good shape so that your body can then let your mind relax, and then you can go on into that meditative moment at the end of a yoga class. Yes.
Mary, I just want to ask you a question. I don't want to lose you on the line. Okay. That's the only reason I cut in, because I'm excited to hear your thoughts on the fact that healthcare, including psychology, of course, but even some of the physical healthcare specialties are looking to mindfulness as a way of controlling pain, as a way of controlling all kinds of things. So as a retired family physician, it must be of special interest to you that these things...
It is. I'm so tired of writing out prescriptions because people expect a pill when they come
right
to the doctor. You know,
right.
And you want to say you need lifestyle. You can say that, but still they want that pill when they walk out. So yoga is something physical. I can say, you know, I only do volunteer work now, but I can say find a yoga class or Google it online and find something on the computer that everybody can do. And, I just really find it appeals to a wide variety of people. I've been teaching it for a couple of years now, and I've had numerous people come to me on how much it's helped them, not just emotionally, psychologically they're stressed, but obviously physical things too, you know, bone densities and asthma and COPD, things like that. But the most importantly is they become more serene and more happy and in the moment and find a connection with that spiritual self that so seldom we take the time to connect with in our busy modern lives in this society where we're constantly bombarded with stuff, you know.
Congratulations on maintaining your practice as a healer.
235-2888 is the phone number. Let's go back to River Market, a coffee shop in River Market, actually. And let's hear what people have to say about work-life balance there.
I am the customer success manager at Suitable Technologies. I'm a single dad, well, not a single dad, but I split custody with a three-year-old. So half the time I've got a three-year-old that I take and, you know, drop off at preschool and pick up and do all the toddler things. And the other part of the time, it's personal life and work, so I've got a pretty good balance going, and yeah, found a pretty good way to kind of mesh everything together. Try new things and try not to worry about things. It's, you know, if you got to go and do something, set your priorities, get it done, and then if you need to take time for yourself, make sure and set time for yourself. That's the big thing.
I'm from Lawrence, Kansas. I run a music website. I started in 1995. The problem with running a website is that you work all the time. You work every day. I haven't taken a day off in about 4.5 years. I probably, you know, there's some days I work 8-10 hours, and then on weekends and Mondays are usually slow. I might work 5 hours on those days, which, and it's broken up. You don't, you know, the web's open 24 hours, so I have to kind of, it's like running a dairy. You know, you have to milk the cows in the morning, then you have to come back in the evening and do it again.
Bruce, like running a dairy farm.
Well, I couldn't run a dairy farm. That's one of the things I'm sure I don't have skill at. Though I did try to milk a cow once. Didn't work. I wasn't good.
But what he says is so very true. Running a website, it is a 24/7 kind of operation.
Well, it's funny because I run a couple of websites. what I didn't hear is any joy in his voice. And there's a big difference between somebody who works on and off 24 hours a day and sounds drained or burdened, and mm-hmm. somebody who does it and they feel really excited. The woman on the recording last time, the food blogger, just sounded so healthy and happy and excited about what she does. And I want this gentleman who has the music website to enjoy it so much that it sounds like he's having a blast. For him, I want that.
And probably when he's working on it, it is a complete gas, but it takes a toll on an individual to commit that level
that's
of time.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
I do have a question. How important is community to a person's achievement of balance? How can we help as a community?
Well, I'm thinking about somebody who has been having some difficulties. This isn't even a patient, but I'm thinking about a person I know who's having some difficulties trying to decide what he or she, I won't even say the gender, is going to do next. And this man or woman is withdrawing from the community and not leaning on people who love him or her. And I can tell that this person's deteriorating from the absence of that kind of meaningful contact. Every time I talk to him, it sounds worse instead of better. So I think the community can be a tremendous source of balance, because if you give to the community will give back to you, and that will be energizing.
I read an article, it was Forbes Online, and it was talking about the reality of life and the fact that we have a new normal, at least that was the argument, and including trends like technology and all the advances in technology, and that there are fewer people needed to do more work, and that we're globalized to the point where, you know, we're always in a position where we're sort of having to be on in the workplace, and that it's, you know, information's coming and going 24/7. This person is saying that we need to shift our thinking, that there needs to be a paradigm shift, that we need to, for example, instead of working harder, work more with passion.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was just saying about the two, you know, essentially
you were,
the two
yes.
website people, uh-huh. the blogger and the music website person, you know.
And I think this probably plays, she's also advocating for moving from managing time to managing attention, which probably plays to being more mindful.
Yes.
Okay. And move from more work hours to resting more.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm sorry, were you done with that?
Yes, yes.
Great. It's interesting because on my way over here, I was on my cell phone talking to somebody who is not happy right now. And they said, I want to find things that make me happy. And the pursuit of happiness for the sake of happiness, I've never found that to be effective for people. The pursuit of doing good for the sake of doing good creates happiness, I think, for all involved. And that joy thing that you mentioned, boy, that's an important term. So part of getting balance in life is making sure that you are doing things that nurture you. And sometimes that's because you're giving to others.
Family psychologist at KU Medical Center, Dr. Bruce Lease, is with us on Central Standard. I'm Bill Anderson. We're talking about work-life balance. And back to the phones, and Leslie has a point to make. Hi, Leslie.
Hi there. It's a great show. Thank you. You know, just in a more general sense, I think it's kind of a foundational issue of how our society in general, people don't know what to do with unstructured time, you know, with the media right in front of them. And I was just thinking an example is the airlines now, or well, at least the media is trumpeting, you know, you can use all your electronic devices from the moment you step on the plane. Well, is anything sacred, you know, where you can just have quiet time in front of you? And I mean, I'm not the best example, but I just believe the Europeans really know something we don't, you know, and that we'll lose part of our humanity with, you know, without the ability to go into ourselves, as uncomfortable as that way may be at times.
Leslie, you said something so profound. I really want to make sure I highlight it. People don't know what to do with unstructured time. I really believe that people start to get anxious if they don't, if they're not sufficiently mindful to know what the use of this unstructured time would do to enhance, you know, who they say they want to be or who they think they want to be. So that was a really good point, as were the others you were making.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I just think of the old days. I was in school in the 60s. I mean, we weren't scheduled to death and had to carry backpacks that would break our, you know, spines, you know, with homework. I mean, we did our homework in school, at least grade school for that matter. And I think it was just, well, you can't go back, I guess. But I just believe we don't want to go to countries like Asia where they have suicide nets in their factories, because, I mean, it's just, it almost goes the other direction. We impose it so much on ourselves that we may as well be our own harsh employer.
Thank you.
You know, I don't work full-time anymore, so I'm at leisure to make these comments.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call, Leslie.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we live in a mobile society, and Laura has a question related to that. Laura's calling from Mission.
Good morning.
Hi, Laura.
Hi. So I just graduated, as did my boyfriend. However, he is now in Boston, and I am still here for 1 year. So I had a question. How do you balance that when you are doing a long-distance relationship and we're both working 5 to 7 days a week, which is definitely more than 40 hours a week?
If any young people in my life were in the room right now, they'd all be chuckling because I say, including my students, my daughter, whoever, I say this over and over again, but I'm not a fan of long distance relationships. I believe that they fight against balance in a person's life. And the important thing to do is to take care of yourself in many, many ways all the time, and having somebody who you know is going to be gone for a year trying to make that work is not taking very good care of yourself. I do believe that very, very healthy people tend to attract each other, as do very unhealthy people. And I am assuming you're a very healthy person. And I believe that putting the relationship on hold until you're able to be close wouldn't be the end of the world. And it would enable you to have balance in your life, because part of balance is having love and affection and romance on a regular basis.
Laura, how do you react to that?
Of course, I, you know, try to reject that feeling.
Laura, you're not the first person who rejected that when I suggested it.
L-O-V-E, Dr. Lise. Well, Laura, I wish you nothing.
3 months. We're getting there.
Three months isn't too bad.
Laura, I'm on your side, so you're going to get there. I've been in that position myself in the past. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Good luck. And I think 3 months isn't that far away.
Hey, we're just about out of time, but Bain writes us, or he's on hold, but I'm not going to be able to put him on the air. We should live our lives inside and out instead of outside in. Live your life from the inside first before worrying about what's happening on the outside.
Perfect. That's what I'm talking about when I say mindfulness and values clarification. Just to reiterate, to have balance in your life, clearly clarify your values as to who you want to be. And then prioritize so you are the person you say you want to be.
Carl suggests he used to work 13 to 14 hours a day. I meditated to cope. It helped me become still and be in the present. And finally, Nancy was online, but we couldn't take her call because of time. Mindfulness and balance have to do with making your own choices. What about letting kids choose what to participate in? Let people be people. Do we end there, Bruce?
I guess so. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed being with you as always.
I want to thank our guest, Dr. Bruce Lease, a family psychologist at KU Medical Center. Nice to see you. You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of kcur.org. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Sydney Llewellyn. Our recordings today were collected by Brianna O'Higgins and Allison Rollitz. I'm Bill Anderson. This is KCUR.
This is KCUR-FM, KCUR-HD1, Kansas City Public Media. I'm Kim Noble. Funding for Central Standards made possible in part by the UMKC Conservatory of Music and Dance presenting the Fall Opera's Massenet.